Yeah. Well, the other thing that threw me for a loop, because I remember when I watched this as a kid, right? Like, it was like, okay,
hold on. Let me really quick say that is not okay. Okay. Listen, if for whatever fucked up reason you're underage and you found this podcast, don't watch this.
Yeah.
You're not ready.
Yeah. Wait a couple years. Yeah. You shouldn't be listening to us because we say horrible things too sometimes.
You'll end up like Mikey.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? Like, that's probably why I'm saying this. Like I said, like, I got weird shit going on in my head. Four, three, two.
Let's do it, baby. 5, 4, 3, 2. Catch this perfect blue.
Oh.
That's it. And we're live in 5, 4.
Hey! Welcome back to Animation Anime. What were you going for there with the finger points?
I fucking don't know.
I thought you had something locked and loaded. And I just went, hey!
We are doing another classic, Perfect Blue, from 97, I think.
I'm not sure.
1997.
Senpai will know.
Yeah, Senpai. What year was this?
You can tell us later. Anyways, off the top, as always, spoiler alert, we will tell you everything about this movie. There's just a lot to talk about.
Let's get you guys' initial reaction to this. Let's go, like, get some general feelings.
Yeah, this
vibes.
Satoshi Kon, man, absolute fucking legend. I will say that right off the bat. This is going to be a weird one because this one, like, he's so high on legendary status.
Yeah,
I might get like actually physical with you.
Why? Why though? Why though?
He's saying this is like beyond criticism.
I know, but I haven't said a single thing yet.
Yeah. Right. Just because I know you. I know you.
97.
Your whole point is to piss me off.
Can I tell you that when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me.
Shut up, bro.
Hit me with some sort of pad there. That's a good one.
Okay, so if you want to know my initial reaction, I guess what I'll say is this is probably going to be a gush episode, top to bottom.
Yeah?
Ooh. Yeah, buddy.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me quickly say 97, bros.
Okay.
We're talking 1997.
97.
So, I was six. I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
96. 12.
12.
I think so,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I watched this when I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. That's probably why I'm so fucked up.
But, you know, 12 or 13, this one's not that crazy. And we'll get into why a bit later on.
A little bit. But, like, I mean, even if we go back to, like, our Ninja Scroll episode, and I watched that when I was 12.
Sure.
Ghost in the Shell. Like, when all these movies, like, just came out and were, like, you know, getting popular in North America, like, I'm watching them as a pretty young youth.
Sure.
And that's probably why I'm a sadist.
If we're going to compare, though, Ninja Scroll, it was, like, a bit gratuitous in its treatment of some of the similarities. And in this one is a bit more, like... I don't know, of the times, like, it you know what I mean, this stuff was happening in lots of movies around that time. It wouldn't have been weird in the way they presented it, right?
Well, this is the thing, right? Like, this is, it's weird, like, it's an unintentional timepiece, but it's still so prevalent now, you know what I mean?
Like, I think it totally is. I think it totally is.
I agree. It's, you know, you see this shit happening in all sorts of media, whether it's like pop music, like actresses, YouTubers, VTuber. Well, maybe not VTubers because they're fucking...
What the fuck is a VTube?
Isn't VTubers like all the like hologram kind of...
You're making shit up.
Like the fake people that don't actually exist? Yeah. Is that what you mean? Like the fake characters that are like YouTubers now that aren't real?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like CGI.
CGI.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing now.
There's like Instagram famous like models and stuff that are like... They don't exist. They're not real. They're made with like deep fakes and like amalgamations of other people.
Well, it's like Hatsune Miku, right? Like Hatsune Miku is just an anime pop star.
Okay.
Like, who has concerts.
Who has concerts. It's completely like holographic. Yeah.
And there's no one there.
Interesting.
There's no person.
Yeah.
It's a fucking hologram.
Yeah.
But it's like an anime hologram. And Hatsune Miku will fill a fucking stadium in Japan, dude.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's huge. Crazy.
Absolutely.
She doesn't huge. Exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But does she? Somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even know. I'm out of the loop. Okay. Okay. So let me give you.
Real quick. Sorry. Nani yeah. means what?
What?
Oh, okay. What?
Yeah.
Oh. There we go. Nani. Now I know.
Not in the loop. But yeah. Okay. VTubers. Hatsune Miku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Idolization yeah. of and fetishization of, yeah. Of things that just should not be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a big conversation about that. After the last episode we recorded.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shut up.
I didn't say you, Jay. I just said that.
That.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you a little bit of this movie from a newbie's perspective, non-anime fan's perspective. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning now that as I write these ways that I describe movies, I tend to relate them to things.
Yeah.
And so I feel like this is kind of like Britney Spears' conservatorship meets Heath Ledger's Joker. You with me?
You know what?
With me?
It's like, I hate your descriptions because I know they're not wrong.
Yeah.
they're like, so white.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're white. They're white. Yeah. I'm white.
No. They're appropriate.
But you see the correlations between both those things, right?
I do. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
For better or worse, I do.
Okay. So we have a Power Ranger turned pop star. Turned extra in Law and Order SVU level actress.
No, there's no Power Ranger.
The first Power scene Ranger. Is Power Rangers.
Yeah, but that's just the Power Rangers was just there for the friggin' the festival.
Oh, that she's not one of them?
No, she's a pop star.
Oh, I thought she was one of them.
She was just performing as
because right after you see the Power Rangers, there's these like nerds walking down the street talking about her performance.
Yeah, because they were talking about their previous performance.
Oh, I thought they were talking about her as a Power Ranger. Okay. Anyway. So she's got multiple stalkers and multiple personalities. Uh-huh. She's the first ever victim of cyberbullying and just can't catch a break with all the hallucinations and people getting murdered all around her. So basically, this is a movie about Hollywood.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, first of all, I gotta say, what the fuck's the internet?
Yeah.
This whole movie, dude. That's what I went by like earlier. Like, you know, it's like an unintentional timepiece, right? Like,
totally.
I mean, like, it's
dude, so they mentioned mini discs. Yeah, she's got a fax machine in her apartment.
She gets a fax, bro. Yeah.
A threatening fax. Yeah. It's so less threatening than a letter. Like, even in the time of faxes, like, send a fucking threatening letter.
Mm.
And make your point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. Like, this is why anime was just so influential, just even in North America, right?
Yeah.
Because Satoshi Kon, like, he's so brilliant in the way that he edited things, in the way that he told the stories. Yeah. Like, this was originally, I think, a novel.
It was a novel before. Perfect Blue, Complete Metamorphosis.
A novel. I'm going to have to read that novel.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And so, but they did stray from that a little bit in the way that they told the story within the anime, because I also think that this was meant to be originally a live action first.
Interesting.
Yeah, but then it turned into an anime.
Yeah.
And then they eventually did a live action.
It's too bad because you know who would have been great as Mima? It was Scarlett Johansson.
Oh my god.
She would have done a really good job.
Bakka is fucking right. Oh my god, dude. If there was anything that was so triggering for me, it was that one.
You got buttons to push. Okay, so another reason I think this is a time capsule is because it also like really encapsulates that like 90s murder mystery thriller movie.
Yeah, and it had that noir feel too, right?
Like that's a vibe of a time as well too, right?
Yeah, but I also think they still do a lot of that like detective mystery, for sure, mystery TV shows.
But
they don't do it nearly as often as I would hope in anime. And also, again, it like even the style of it. And this is why I'm getting you to watch all the classics first.
Yeah.
As much as we can, because it's so prevalent in what we're going to see later on with some of the newer stuff.
Interesting.
Later on, right? Yeah. Because you get to see the tropes. But like with Satoshi Kon, you don't see any tropes. He created like just immaculate scenery, immaculate storytelling, really snapshotty.
Scenery is really beautiful. A lot of the city scapes.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you, dude. Compared to a lot of the stuff we've watched, I actually was like underwhelmed by a lot of the art and the drawing of the backgrounds and stuff, dude.
Yeah, because you're used to fucking CG.
We just like Ghost in the Shell, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I'm comparing
spoiled.
That's what I'm saying.
That's also,
compared
that's also
to the
true.
Shit we've been watching,
that's
the art
fair.
In general, I was like, it's fine. You hit on the editing. Fucking brilliant, dude.
Yeah.
Unbelievable editing. Just the shots, the quick cuts, and the way it disorients you. And we're going to talk about that word's going to come up a lot. Disorientation.
Unsettling. Unsettling film.
Fucking terrifying. Yeah. Like,
watch this shit late at night and you will not want to go to bed, bro. Yeah. Like, it is a fucking unsettling film. Yeah. It really is.
But there's also, like, it. This movie influenced, what was it, Black Swan with Darren Aronofsky.
Oh, yeah, I can see that, for like, sure.
Right, and then they pretty much remade that scene where she's in the bathtub in Requiem for a Dream, where she's, like, laying in there and screaming into the water. Like, that was, like, a complete remade shot, one for one for that.
Yeah. I feel like that's become a trope in movies, too. Like, that's Requiem in the Dream, probably Requiem for a Dream probably isn't the only other time you've seen that, too. Like, sure. I feel like that comes up a lot, right?
Yeah, well, it's like, we were talking, like, ages ago when we were messaging each other about how fucking, like, we're probably going to do an Akira episode, but, like, the Akira bike scene where he's, like, sliding the bike, like, everybody's
Who hasn't tried to mimic that scene?
You know what I mean? Like, the bike, just so iconic. And like, this is, again, one of those things. Like, Satoshi Kon has also made Paprika, which we're going to watch too eventually.
Sure.
He's on Tokyo Godfather, Millennial Actress.
So a lot of these are titles I've heard the names of before, to be honest with you.
Like I said, this guy is legend.
And Paprika is really cool because, like, it's another one that, like, you know, he really likes to try and blur the lines between, like, reality and
I have a lot of notes about blurred lines here
and
too,
fantasy,
dude.
Right? Yeah. Like he really does like to try and put you in that zone where you don't know what's happening, real and what's not.
Yeah,
what's happening or what isn't. Yeah.
The thing about Paprika is that's what spurred on Inception.
Yeah. Right?
So we'll get into that on another episode.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, totally. But the influence is far reaching.
Oh yeah,
far reaching.
Okay, so I have a question for you, just off the top here. Okay. Don't look at me like that. So, like, you named a lot of...
My face has been fine all day long until I sat down, and now my eye's twitching.
Dude, rest assured you're going to be fine in this episode. I'm sure you'll have your moments, but you'll be fine.
Much easier time than the last time I did.
Yeah.
It'd be just great.
Jay got emotional instead of angry. Mikey just yells at me. Okay, so everything that makes this film anime, like I said, like the art, you know what I mean? Okay, even the music, like the what makes it an anime film was kind of like slightly underwhelming. It's the writing and the editing that makes it so good. So my question is take the anime out of the film and make it a live action, and does it really still earn its like top five spot?
No.
See what I'm saying? No. And so what's interesting about it is it's unique in anime, but it's not unique in film.
But that's the beauty of anime. That's the whole point of why we're doing this show, right?
So it's really interesting is like you're going to take something like anime and you're going to make it like on the same level as like the zeitgeist of film.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, elevating the art form.
Yeah.
This is the perfect example of the art form being elevated.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the thing is, there's a certain level of charm and imagery that you just can't, that you can immerse yourself into, and you can suspend a level of disbelief because it's anime and you can immerse yourself into that.
Yeah.
Where in live action, you need so many more things to ground yourself in it.
Yeah.
Right? And like, that's like, for example, I don't know if you noticed in this movie, but... Satoshi's use of the color red.
Interesting.
Right? So when you see, you know, was it Mami?
Mima.
Sorry. I don't know why I can't say Mami.
Mami. It's close, dude. It's close.
That was the Freudian.
I know. That was a brain fart. Mima, like when she starts to kind of go have her mental breakdown.
Yeah.
You know, you start seeing red in certain places.
Interesting.
Like where you're seeing like she's wearing a red shirt, like, or her assistant's wearing a red shirt, or you're seeing like them next to a red background, and it just
Red lipstick.
Red lipstick. It just keeps getting redder and redder and redder.
I didn't notice that, but that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Just because it has that feeling, right?
But again, like, I'm not hating on the film, but like you do that in live action film a lot too, right? Like those things
Selective
come across.
Color exists.
So
Schindler's List.
Yeah.
I'm posing as a person that like, because the anime parts of it are like not top notch, that like maybe its top five spot is only because it stands out in the genre. And I know you're saying that elevates the genre, but to me, it almost also felt like it was just like, like taking something that already works and just making it animation. And I was like, that actually takes away from it a little bit for me, to be honest with you. Because was A plus art, A plus music, A plus anime elements, then you've given me a top five anime movie.
No, but the other thing though is like in even, let's take anime out of it entirely. Yeah,
sure.
And we just go based strictly on storytelling and strictly on filmography.
It's
and
great,
editing.
Dude. Don't get me wrong. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. And I hear you. And this is why I think it's top five, because at the time it was really innovative.
Yeah.
Innovative.
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 No, I know. I think it's super important what you're bringing up.
Yeah. Right? Like it was
unprecedented at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This didn't exist in anime.
Sure.
Prior to this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then not to mention the type of story that it's telling and like you know, having psychotic breakdowns or even the idea of maybe even schizophrenia within the movie genres weren't as explored in this crazy, like especially explicit way.
Yeah.
Right. In some of those scenes, like especially the rape scene, like and how fucked up
which one?
Like the well that's the thing, right? Like the
the
trauma that's involved, right? Yeah. Like I mean they've done that in live action movies, but not in the same way.
Yeah. They have though. There's lots of times that happens.
But yeah, but
and that's kind of what I'm saying. And I'll say that I know I'm coming at this from the perspective of a non-anime watcher and a white guy. Mm-hmm. And so like if you're an anime watcher and you've not seen that a bunch of times already in live action movies, then you're right. This is fucking groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. But for me, a lot of the things that make this great, I'd seen it before. So like in the like repertoire of films I've seen in my life,
the grander scheme of filmmaking,
it's not top five for me.
Underwhelming for you?
A little bit. I mean, it was. Don't get me wrong. Great, really good fucking movie.
You're
gonna like the score I give it at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm saying it gets a top five only because only in people who probably haven't experienced this kind of movie a lot previously before seeing this. Do you see what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying, but I feel like your biases are coming in because
I said that.
Well, no. But like, listen. Because you're comparing it to what this influenced and how it influenced what's more
recent.
When
did it come out though? Because in the 90s, I'm sure there was a lot of these like psychological thriller crime
97.
Mystery 90, dramas. 97. Yeah, dude. See, it's not.
It was of the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying,
it's
right?
It's a very
so
common
it,
thing
it
in
stands
the 90s.
Out as an anime. And so for people who have a background in anime and are coming from anime to it, absolutely groundbreaking.
Yeah. Mm.
But for a person who's coming from like, you know, grew up in the 90s, watched a lot of films that weren't anime and then came to this later, it doesn't have the same impact.
But at the same time, dude, I think if you were to approach somebody who wasn't familiar with anime, who only maybe had a surface level understanding of it, and you explained to them the premise of this movie, and then at the very end you were like, also, it's like anime, like Dragon Ball Z, like Yu-Gi-Oh!
But they're
it's anime.
A lot of people are going
to... I think that would be like very surprising to a lot of people.
But I think a lot of people who have that perspective that I have are going to like lessen their expectations because of that. You know
right,
I mean?
but then it will blow their expectations out of the water.
Yeah, it could, absolutely. You know how it would do that even better though is if the anime elements were A+ and not B at best.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Again, it's one of those things. Like I know we spoiled you with Ghost in the Shell, and
which is
like,
such a visual feast.
Exactly, and I wish this was too.
The visuals of Ghost in the Shell actually override the story for me.
For sure, I agree wholeheartedly.
Whereas I feel like this one is story driven. This one is very much the narrative is very engaging, and the visuals are great. They serve everything perfectly.
Yeah.
It doesn't leave you wanting by any means.
You're right.
But I wouldn't say this is a visual feast on the same level as Ghost in the Shell, but I will say the narrative of this blows Ghost in the Shell out of the water.
Oh, agreed. I agree wholeheartedly. I agree wholeheartedly.
But even still, it's anime
from a narrative
the 90s,
perspective, this fucking rips.
Yeah. I agree, dude. You said it was a book, and now I want to read the book because I was like really like
top five.
By the story.
All right, so... Why don't we go to Senpai, though?
Yeah, let me give you guys the breakdown of this. Yeah. So, Perfect Blue, in Japanese, Pefekuto Buru, is a...
There's words for perfect and blue in Japanese, right?
No, there is not.
There has to be. Blue is a color.
So, you have to understand, like, some Asian language is borrowed from English.
From its inception, you mean?
Yes, dude. It's a younger. It is technically a lot of it is.
I'm not trying to
language.
Be insensitive. I should say. I just like that surprises
dude, I mean,
me, dude.
Mikey can confirm. lipstick in Korean
yeah.
is ripustick.
Okay, but yeah. lipstick is like a modern creation. We're talking about the color blue.
Lipstick is a modern creation?
Yeah, dude.
You don't think people were wearing lipstick hundreds of thousands of years ago?
Probably. I guess so, dude. Yeah, I don't know.
Listen,
yeah, to me, like, it's a tube of a thing. The color of blue, dude.
Asia had lipstick dude, before the word lipstick
the
existed.
The color of blue, though, predates humanity. It's the sky. So I'm just saying that, like, an ancient culture would have had a word for that.
In yeah. language?
I don't know.
All right, dude. You know what? I'm going to move this over to my Schweebs and do some research for us yeah. and correct whoever's yeah. wrong.
And again, not being insensitive, just saying that why that's so shocking to me.
The Japanese is pefekuto buru.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just telling you the facts.
I got
bro.
You. I'm just shocked. I'm just
get really mad at the Japanese people.
I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just surprised. I want to be very clear at that. Not mad at the translation.
Is a 1997 Japanese animated psychological thriller film directed by Satoshi Kon. It is based on the novel Perfect Blue: Complete Metamorphosis, or Pafekuto Buru Kanzen Hentai by Yoshikazu Tekuchi, with a screenplay written by Sadayuki Murai. The film features the voices of Junko Iwao, Riko Matsumaru, Shiho Niyama, Masaki Okura, Shinpachi Suchi, and Emiko Furukawa. Apologize for any mispronunciations of any of that stuff. Did my best. The film follows Mima Kirigoe, a member of a Japanese idol group who retires from music to pursue an acting career. As she becomes a victim of stalking, gruesome murders begin to occur, and Mima starts to lose her grip on reality.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. That's your premise, that's, guys. That's your it. Breakdown right yeah. there.
And I also, like how it doesn't give too much away so that we can.
Yeah, yeah. You guys can dip right into all of our big everything. Plot points, yeah. all our big twists and turns. Yeah.
Because really, we'll talk about world and art, but the way to cover this movie is to like break it down scene by scene.
Oh, yeah.
So that's go the through way. The story.
Yeah. This is one of those things because it gets so convoluted at points where you really don't know between reality and if she's having like a mental breakdown or
but the narrative itself is very simple as well.
But that's the
thing,
right?
Well, you find out in the end that it is, but as you're watching it, they do this thing, and I was going to talk about it later, but this is as good a time as any. They do this thing where they keep letting you think you know what's going on,
yeah.
and then like a minute later, they're like, nah. You're like, I was sure that was it. And they do it to you. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, probably 30 times, I swear, I was sure. And sometimes it was like in a matter of minutes. It's like, oh, that's clearly what's happening. No, wait. It's that conclusion. No, it's that conclusion. Like, all in a minute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Okay. So let's quickly go through world and art because,
The world is Japan in the 90s.
In the 90s. Fax machines made it.
Very realistic depiction of idol culture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
Idol obsession.
Yeah, and you had the Power Rangers. Like, I mean, like that was huge back in the day, and it still is now to a degree.
Totally.
And sexploitation.
Yeah,
let's sexploitation. Just say all the roles that she was being casted for, all the films she was acting in.
Well,
very much.
She only had one role the whole movie.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
In the same film, but the scenes that she was filming.
It was a TV show.
The repetitive scenes that she was doing. It was very of the time.
Yeah.
90s
for sure.
was very much capitalizing on sexploitation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We already kind of covered art, to be honest with you. I don't even feel like we need to delve in there.
No, and that's the thing, right? Like, I think you and I can agree to disagree on the art because, I always view it at the time. And at the time, even this was really well made. And like, I mean,
but was it though? Because it's at the time
I'm
of
gonna fucking
dude,
fight.
It's at the time of Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah,
so you can't say it's very well made when you have a movie like that to hold it up against, man.
Compare it to the TV at the time.
Yeah.
Compare it to the TV output of anime at the time.
Sure.
This was still film level anime.
Yeah.
And you have to understand the huge difference between TV quality anime and film level quality anime.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Editing, the animation,
I will agree, is like knockout.
The key frames in this, aka the frames where you have good artists drawing it.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of filler frames. There isn't a lot of in-between low quality frames. This is key animated throughout.
Yeah.
This is
I can get behind
cell
that.
Cell by
pause
cell
this
at any moment.
Yeah,
kind
I can get behind
of
that. Yeah.
anime. No CG. Cell by cell, every motion drawn, right? Like, this is the shit I love.
Yeah,
and right? one thing I want to say about the art, and this is a bigger plot point you guys can dig into, okay? But I will say, this is an interesting thing I kind of picked up that I initially wrote off, okay?
Okay, sure.
About the art style and about some of the character design choices, okay?
Sure.
Was I noticed how off-putting and uncomfortable it made me, how far apart the eyes were of the stalker character.
Yeah.
And then the correlation of her assistant.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the eyes being very far set apart.
See, I never made that correlation, but it's there.
100%. In a similarly unsettling way.
Yeah.
And you really only feel the unsettlingness, because at first you feel like, okay, she's portly, she's a little heavier. Yeah. Maybe that's why they're making her a little wider set, whatever.
Yeah.
But it isn't until the end.
She gets those crazy eyes and she smiles at her. Dude. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And you start to see the correlation. And I don't know if it's an artistic choice, but it is very unsettling to see those kind of... inhuman, almost alien-like proportions
that's
in the face.
That's a thing, dude. And again, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Black
but, like,
and white but no, it's related to the art. This is art choices.
Yeah, and I did think at first that we were going to get some supernatural element out of this guy when I see him for the first time. I was like, oh, that guy's an alien. Mm. Or that guy's a mutant or something. Right away.
Yeah.
Another character that you didn't mention that I noticed too that has a similar unsettling face.
The photographer,
dude. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the same face as the creeper, dude.
His eyes are also just begging to be stabbed.
And sweating. He's creepy, man.
Yeah.
So it's for
really
sure.
Stabbable eyes.
Yeah. But I think that's the nice thing is like it forcibly tells you who's the bad guy in that way, right?
It forcibly forces you to think you know who the bad guy is because you don't see it in her.
It just unsettles you.
It's just
disorienting, which again is the word that I'm going to use a bunch of times because that's really how you feel watching this movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. Okay, you want to talk about music really quick? What'd you say?
I said, go watch it if you still have it.
Yeah, I agree. Go watch it. Yeah, 100%.
100%. I mean, trigger warning. Okay, guys.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
Heads up if you're insensitive to, you know, a lot of, you know, sexual violence and whatnot. There's a lot of that in this movie.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about some, so also trigger
and
warning
also
for this if you're watching.
Full-blown, just regular-ass violence as well.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Just heads up.
Yeah.
So you guys know.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about music really briefly to lighten up the mood of that trigger warning. I guess you can't talk about music without talking about Cham.
Okay.
Because Cham is like what I think a 90s dance pop girl group from Japan would sound like, but it doesn't sound anything like a 90s girl group from America. So I actually don't have a frame of reference if it's like on par or not.
No, it is.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It very much so is. And like I read somewhere too that they purposefully made, if you watch the Cham like do their choreography.
Yeah.
And if you watch,
You
don't get a lot of it.
Sure.
But like, if you've seen other animes where you have like a pop singer or pop, like dancers or choreography, they're always 100% in sync.
Yeah.
Where this one, Satoshi Kon purposely made them kind of off sync
to make them look a little more realistic or something. Yeah. Interesting. That's right. Smart. Yeah.
So it's like little details like that. Yeah.
It reinforces Mima as well as like
being
the star, favorite. The center. Yeah. That's right. Of course,
well,
yeah.
Even that scene where like Mima or whatever, the freaky dude, like he holds out his hand and
he's holding her. Okay,
we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to that in a minute. We're talking about music right now.
Okay.
We're gonna get to that in a second. Okay, so the only other note I had about music was there's like one of those classic vocal chant scenarios, but it's like not quite as good as some of the other ones. And again, this brings me back to my comment before where like the anime parts of this anime were just kind of like eh. Whereas like the writing of the story was really what stands out, right? Okay. So the music was fine. The art was fine, in my opinion, great in your guys' opinion, but the writing is really good. So let's get to
fine. Let's move on from that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So speaking of writing,
what
someone who is watching us right now could maybe write us a comment and then click subscribe to our page.
Oh my god! That legitimately blew my mind. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I expected it maybe from Jay.
Yeah,
100% from me. I fucking do it all the time.
I was honestly waiting on it from you. I'm surprised we've got 31 minutes in to this recording and you haven't said it yet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That being said, guys,
please.
We got you now.
So happy for some reason.
For my achievements, for Mikey's blown mind. Give us a comment, like, subscribe, tell a friend about what we got going on if you like it. It means a lot.
Listen, if you guys did, it would be really super.
Oh, come
on. Okay, let's get into it. Don't do that anymore. Okay, so the intro, we get the performance scene, okay?
Yeah.
We get an intro to the pop group, right? Yeah. So we get a foundation for what Mima is and where she comes from, okay? Mm-hmm. She's that classic suffering pop star. She's got no ownership over her life. Because even in the first couple scenes, she's getting rushed around backstage and costume changes. And it's like, it's hard for her, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, which is why I bring in that Britney Spears thing, right? Like, she's just... she's being paraded around.
Well, it's not, it's like, it, that's why I'm saying it's like, it's so relevant now too, yeah. right? Because it's not just Britney Spears or like any other pop singer. I think it's even in like, I know Jay, you love K-pop, but like K-pop is terrible.
Dude, this
for
movie
like,
spoke to me on like a whole other level.
Yeah. Yeah. No with doubt.
The, right. Like no they doubt. Don't have any control over their lives.
Yeah.
Right. True. And like that whole dark side, that underbelly of the industry, yeah. right? It's really, really dark.
It's totally, real. Like, yeah. Like one of my favorite groups, Twice, their center, their main member, their face of their group.
Sure.
Literally within the past 3 years had a situation where there was somebody who became very infamous on the internet for stalking one particular member.
Yeah.
He traveled to Korea from Germany.
Wow.
Went to their agency and was hanging out in their agency building, waiting for her to leave the building.
Yeah.
It literally escalated to a point where they had to actually sue the guy.
Yeah.
And have legal matters force the guy out of the country.
Crazy, man.
Otherwise, he wasn't leaving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was writing regularly online that he felt that they were meant to be together.
Man.
That they belonged together.
Yeah.
That she wanted this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where she had to make actual statements, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Herself saying, please stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please stop.
Yeah.
And that's happening within the past 2 or 3 years.
Crazy.
It's happening every day.
Of course.
It's happening to thousands of artists on a constant basis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're being stalked to this level.
Well, you put yourself in the public eye and you like you open yourself up to scrutiny, but also adoration, right? And both of those things get taken to like a drastic level.
Dude, Lily Allen.
But that's the thing.
You
right?
guys know Lily Allen?
I'm not sure. I know who you're talking about.
She's a UK singer. She's super fucking famous.
Okay.
Shame on both of you.
You, man.
I don't
whatever,
care.
Buddy.
Shame.
Yeah, get out of here.
Everybody online will agree with me, and you'll see that in the comments.
All right, my Shweebs.
Sound off, because I know you guys are going to have my back.
Is she good?
Yeah, okay. Dude. She's fucking amazing. Okay.
I'll check it out. I'm into it.
She was notorious because she actually had a stalker in her hotel room.
That's fucked
oh,
up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not good.
and that's within the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But see, that's man. What I'm saying. Like,
it's
like
very real.
With Perfect Blue, you get these real life scenarios that have just been going on for years.
Yeah.
And like you're not only getting it from the outside with stalkers or these crazy fandoms, like even with Jimin from BTS, there's that other guy, Ollie London,
right? Yeah.
Like thinking he is Jimin.
Yeah.
And then you have the corporation and the label side or your agency side, right? Making you do or like proposing you do all these things that you don't really want to do.
Yeah.
That's like
almost perpetuating.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like literally forcing trauma on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like not only personally committed to the career, but also probably like contractually committed to do kind of what they say a lot of the times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Like super fucked.
I mean, listen, if you don't feel for Mima after watching this movie, like
oh, yeah,
if you don't feel bad for the life she's been handed, I mean, you're a fucking robot.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, so let's get into it about the creeper, because you talked about the holding in the hand scene, and that's the first time you meet him, right?
Yeah.
So he's got his hand out, and it sets up two real important things. One, it's the pedestal he holds her up on, okay? Mm-hmm. Before you even see his face, you see him holding her on the pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
But also, she, like, dances out of it and blurs away out of the scene, which also, like, is felt to me in the end of how little control he has over the situation, which is massive foreshadowing to what's going to happen later, dude. Massive foreshadowing.
Dude has no idea what's about to happen.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like we were talking about how, you know, you have this persona that is, you, like, in the public eye, but that's what this stalker guy is in love with, is the persona, the agency selling
the manufactured
right? Like that's what he's in love with, because anything else that's not that is not the Mima
he rejects.
Knows.
It he rejects it.
Yeah, he's like, hold me closer, time to dance. She's spinning around in his hand.
Well, the other thing that threw me for a loop, because I remember when I watched this as a kid, right? Like, it was like, okay,
hold on, let me real quick say that is not okay. Okay, listen, if for whatever fucked up reason you're underage and you found this podcast, don't watch this. You're not ready.
Wait a couple years. You shouldn't be listening to us, because we say horrible things too sometimes.
You'll end up like Mikey.
That's the thing, right? Like, that's probably why I'm saying this, like I said. Like I got weird shit going on in my head. But But like, you know what? You fucking threw me right off track.
Okay, let's move on. No. You finish your thought.
Okay. So
if you can.
So this is the thing, right? So anything that like he holds on to,
yeah,
right, he rejects, right? But the nice thing about the beginning, when I compare it to when I watched it as a little kid to now as an adult, which threw me for a loop. I thought I was going to actually watch him become like a hero.
Whoa. Like
sympathetic?
Really?
Yeah, sympathetic. Because when I was a kid, when I watched, I didn't understand the movie for all fuck. What I saw was violence and boobs.
Yeah.
Right? And then like pop star. Okay, this doesn't really make any sense. I didn't know what mental health was. I didn't really understand it. But I just knew that it visually, it was so stimulating and it gave me all these weird dopamines because
sex and violence.
And I was just trying to consume whatever anime I could at the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's all I wanted. It's same with like when we talked about Ninja Scroll, right? It's just hyper gratuitous violence that I just wanted because I'm, you know, this
You're chasing the dragon.
I'm just chasing the dragon.
You need more and more and more. Yeah,
right?
So what's funny about what you just said is like you expected him to kind of be like a hero type. And while he's not really a hero type, he definitely in the end, like you feel some sympathy towards him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he's a pawn in it all too, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? True. And he probably, like you said, you didn't understand mental health. He's a mentally unhealthy human being.
Oh, absolutely.
Who gets wrapped up in some shit. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And in
he's a predator and a victim.
Yeah.
At the same time.
100%.
Which is 100%. Fucked up, but like it's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's why it's like so prevalent now. Like the similarities are crazy from a 97 movie to what we're being when Jay and I have been watching this K-pop stuff that he's been introducing me to.
Yeah. We lost you, didn't we? Yeah, we lost you.
Hey.
Because like, my wife's gotten into it. So I'm just kind of there
by
osmosis.
Doomed. Yeah, you're doomed.
Right? Like, I'm just kind of like tagging along for the ride. But it's true. They fabricate this image of these K-pop artists. And they know the formula to make it successful.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's... They know it, right? Like they know that we're going to get that dopamine.
Totally. Hit. Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay, so that's a great segue because the next thing we're going to talk about is there's a little tiny scene where they discuss her moving away from being a pop star and into
the actress. Yeah.
And it's her management, the two, her management team, they're making the decision, right? And one of her managers is kind of not into it, which is also massive foreshadowing, dude, which is something this movie's brilliant at. Fucking brilliant at, dude.
I cannot wait to watch this again.
Me too. You know what? Sadly, since we've started this podcast, every movie I've watched twice. This one I only watched once, and now I'm like, I'm gonna watch it again. I'm gonna watch it again even once the show's done.
Yes.
Like, which never happens for me.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna show it to my girlfriend, but I cannot wait to see all the shit.
But it's such a nice, subtle foreshadowing that you don't know until the end.
Yeah, dude, exactly. Right? A lot of them are.
We'll get to it, but dude, the ending twist.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Me up.
Okay. Oh, dude, yeah.
We're gonna get in the weeds because this movie is like weedy. There's a lot to gush about. Like I said, it's a gush episode for us, dude.
It's not a clean line.
Okay, so another thing just about this scene really quickly, they use the term, and then maybe this is a translation in the subtitles, but they use the term graduate. She's going to graduate as if there's like a lineation.
I know that's contextual. So a lot of the times within
senpai coming in with the knowledge,
especially J-pop groups, this is actually kind of separate from K-pop. K-pop's a little different, but J-pop groups a lot of the times they have these massive, massive groups, right? Yeah. So, for example, Mima's three-piece group in real-life terms would probably have been a part of like a 50, 60-person group.
Okay.
That they break off into small little groups.
I see.
And sometimes they graduate members into the upper echelon of that larger group.
I see what you're saying.
And sometimes they graduate members even out of the group. But it's always this idea of like relating it back to school.
Like there's a hierarchy.
School and moving up.
Upward growth.
And growing out of things.
Yeah.
And that whole mentality. And they relate it back to, you know, the school life because they're tailor-made for school kids to love.
Yeah.
They want to feel like, oh, I'm graduating school. Mima's graduating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they usually get all these guys and girls really young.
Yeah.
Right,
the idea of graduating, that is 100% from real life J-pop groups.
So what I thought was interesting, not knowing that, is like that becomes one of the main conflicts of the film, is she's constantly wondering whether she should have moved forward or not. Mm-hmm. Right. So the term graduation in the end doesn't really work because it doesn't work out for her. It's not upward growth in the end. If she had stayed back where she was, that's really the spot for her.
But that's the inner turmoil. So the term
graduation was like interesting there.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of her inner turmoil.
Yeah.
It is like, because she puts so much effort into becoming a pop idol, but it's just the fact that her agency had noticed that she had some acting skills and totally probably have done really well.
And not just acting skills though, but she's also like super naive and like easily to take advantage of, right? She's that dangerous mix of like ambitious, willing, and also like uninformed. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't really know necessarily what she's agreeing to.
Her whole world is telling her to do one thing.
Everyone, but not her family, because she has that conversation with her mom and they're like, why?
Why? You love singing. Yeah. You've tried so long to be a singer.
Your uncle buys 20 copies every time a new singer comes out.
You tried so hard to be a singer for so long. Why would you give that up now?
I know, right? Yeah, man. Well, it's because that's her thing about being ambitious, right? She's committed to the life.
She thinks she's doing what's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so she goes home after that decision, right?
Yeah.
And she's like kind of like into it. She's going along with it. She pulls the poster down in the room, which is like of significance, which is interesting. And she gets that call from her mom, and then she gets a strange other call with a bunch of heavy breathing. And right away you're like, okay, this is the creeper. Right away, man. Right? Which it is, we assume anyhow. But
right away, I remember watching this movie at night.
Yeah. Okay, and then she gets that fucked up fact, which just says traitor over and over and over again. So right away, that one word implies what the like antagonist is thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you were not allowed to change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You need to be this person.
You're the
person,
tiny dancer in my palm.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Be what I want you to be.
Exactly, right?
And he stalks her all the time, like works all the security jobs around her sets and stuff like that.
Yeah. Does he work jobs or does he just show up? It didn't seem to me like he was working. He was
the very first scene he was working. He was stage security.
Oh, right? That's true. He was in front of the barrier. I didn't even notice that.
That's what I'm saying. Like this is where I got like a little bit thrown for a loop, because I was trying to remember what it was like when I watched it as a kid, because he stops those hecklers who were throwing. That's right.
I thought he was just being like chivalrous. I didn't realize he was actually security.
He was being chivalrous.
But also it's his job.
But in the guise of the security guard.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah. That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So then she also finds the website.
Yeah,
right.
Which I gotta say,
Mima's room, having to watch
the scene where she has to learn how to use a website and then what, like,
totally, dude. And then later on there's a scene she's like, I'm doing well. She types in the URL, I'm doing well.
Little factoid: at the time, Netscape Navigator was the browser of choice. Gradually declined in popularity over the next few years and ultimately ceased in 2008.
So. That's so funny, dude.
Goodbye, Netscape Navigator. You died. Perfect Blue will be your swan song.
Yeah. Macintosh survived. That was a Macintosh computer.
That's true. Okay, so all the posts are it's a fan made, she knows, because she didn't write it. But all the posts are like ultra accurate about like the shit she's doing in her spare time. So right away, you know something's going on, right?
Yeah.
And something I love about this too, right, is like right away you assume it's the creeper guy, right? But they don't confirm it right away. They give you some time to mull it over, which I like kind of loved about it, because the whole movie is about wondering and doubting. So you're like, oh, it's the creeper guy, right? They set it up for you. This is just another one of those examples where they're like, you know what's going on. You're watching. We're giving it to you.
We're giving it to you.
It's a creepy fucking guy, obviously.
Yeah, we've planned it out. We've put the storyboard up for you.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally. And so now that she knows she's being stalked, the creeper guy now starts showing up in all these like quick cut scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So like quick, a flash of him.
Yeah. Very quick flashes.
Totally, dude. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And so, okay, so then we're going to move on. She gets a line in a TV show. Mm-hmm. Big deal, right? It's her first thing, right? And the line is, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Which, how smart.
Oh,
because they use it in such a good fucking way, dude.
Oh, so layered. Because
they use it in ways. She's in front of the computer. Who are you?
She's practicing her lines. Who are you? She's on set. Who are you?
Yeah. Right? It just really bridges those two parts of her world.
Yeah.
Like,
it is the movie. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's the whole movie.
Yeah. Who are you?
Totally. 100%.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right? Like she doesn't. When the point comes where she doesn't know who she is, and she's trying to figure that out, and trying to hold on so tightly to her identity, right? Like, you just see that struggle. I'm getting chills just remembering. It's just,
and there's so moments where she's giving in to what she thinks her identity might be falsely, right? Like that false image she creates, which we'll get into later. She's like, that's probably the real me, and not this crazy dude.
And just the struggling conflict.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I love this.
We're gushing.
Yeah, this is just a straight gush.
Yeah, dude.
It's gush so episode, man. Like, okay,
so yeah. let's go on, because again, weeds. So there's a exploding letter on the set, weed. Right? And right away, I'm like, dude's dead. But no, he's not dead. It was just like a fake out.
Senpai's high.
You're fucking high. You're not. I'm just saying. Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay. So here's another thing that's cool, okay? So the TV show isn't complete yet. They haven't written who the criminal is, which again, fucking genius, because the way this all unfolds and the plot of the TV show, which again, we'll get to later, but like everything is foreshadowing something else.
Uh-huh.
There's like almost not a thing that isn't related to something else later.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? Yeah.
Fuck.
It's well, and the other thing too, it's like how the writer didn't finish it.
Yeah.
Right. And when he dies, like you don't know how it's going to end.
Right.
So now it leaves everything open ended as far as like.
Well, they did have an ending when he died.
Did they?
I don't remember that. And they actually are filming a scene at one point where we'll get there, but they write it in a supernatural way where they're like, imagine you can create an image of yourself and that image can possess a body.
That's right. Okay. Right? Yeah.
Which is crazy because that's what she thinks is happening. Okay. But we'll get there. We're getting ahead of ourselves, which is fun because this movie's fucking great, dude. You have to connect the dots as they come up, right?
Yeah.
You're compelled to.
You have to.
Yeah. But it's funny
for that
though.
Reason.
Yeah.
You know, you try, but even if you try to connect the dots, another dot comes up where it's like way before that, that you have to go back to.
Like, that's why I want to watch it again because I'm like,
how many clues did I miss?
That's what I'm saying, because I caught a lot of them.
So many.
A million, I'm sure.
I feel the same way. Yeah. And that's why I can't wait to watch it again, too. Because like, holy fuck, how much better is this going to be on second watch?
Yeah.
And you don't get to say that often about films, man.
It's true.
It's true.
Okay, so so she now, there's like an element of danger now that there's the exploding letter. Because at first it was like, creepy guy on the internet. But now it's, and like, whatever, even the facts, she's like, it's not hurting anybody. Now there's blood on the scene, okay? Mm-hmm. So she's freaking out and she just runs out of the subway, which is kind of interesting because of all the times this guy's been following her and chasing her, he's not right then and there.
Yeah.
Right? Which is kind of interesting. It's like an intro to her delirium.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Which is, I think, pretty cool. You know what I mean? The fact that they're doing that separate from the creeper. She's going crazy on her own, regardless of it all.
It's important to throw you off between the creeper and the final reveal.
Yeah,
because you have to feel at some point like it's her.
Yeah,
yeah,
like she's the one doing it.
Because at one point you're sure she fucking is.
You're positive.
You're positive. Her.
Yeah, but they need to start setting that up at some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Is this the scene where she runs into the road and the truck? She thinks the truck hit her. No, that's later.
That's later.
Oh, no.
Later.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Sorry. There's a foreshadowing to that here. Okay.
Yeah.
So she gets into her apartment building and there's a note pinned to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this? And it's like such and such guy was hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the guy from it's a picture of the guy from the performance, like the bully guy, right?
Yeah.
And so right away, you know two things, right? You get two things. You get the creeper is like a benevolent killer.
Yeah.
Which is fucked up. He's killing people that wrong her.
Yeah.
He's like a vigilante.
Vigilante.
Like fighting on her behalf.
Exactly, right? and you also plant the seeds of the creeper driving a vehicle into someone, which comes up twice later.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is fucking great, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then she sees him. Bop. He's there outside her apartment.
Yep.
And then the door closes, which is like, oh, man. Yeah. So close to home, right? And which is... A part of me wants to think she should be freaking out even harder, but she hasn't made the connection with him yet. Maybe she doesn't remember.
Freaking out as much as I was.
Yeah, right.
Well, but that's the thing, right? Like, she doesn't know that it's specifically him. She kind of has that feeling.
It's the naivete, man. Yeah, there's so much naivete with this character.
And part of me thinks maybe even as weird as he fucking looks, that she doesn't remember him from the performance. Maybe because a lot's gone on in her life since then.
No way she does. Yeah, dude. I mean,
he's a monster looking face, but still,
But why would she pay attention?
Well, there was an incident. Right, the hecklers, and then there was a fight.
Right, but so still, why would she pay attention to his face?
Yeah,
she doesn't care.
It doesn't matter.
He's a security guard at one of her shows.
It's true. I think there was even actually a moment of acknowledgement after that fight where they
you know what? I feel like there was, but I feel like that was more for him.
Yeah. No, and again, you're right.
But you can write it.
You don't have to dwell on that. Yeah.
She sees her or him, but. It's like, it's the fact that like there are little blips of him every so often that just plants a seed in her.
Yeah.
That just like brings it all out of like, okay, this is familiar, but it's unsettling.
Yeah. Right? There's even, if I'm not mistaken, moments where she blips to him and then she blips to the same scene and he's not there.
Yeah.
Which is like, am I making this fucker up? Like, I don't know. Well, a lot of shit could be going on, right?
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like I'm getting a little bit ahead of ourselves right now, but like when she has the Phantom Mima,
yeah,
like show up, right? Yeah. Like we, that's never explained whether or not that's her, like either actually having a psychotic breakdown and yeah. like hallucinating,
whether it's some supernatural thing. It is in the end explained.
Or it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Is.
Yeah,
but yeah, but you're right. You know what I mean? Again, with the disorientation and then making you think you know and then not knowing, it's just it's layers and layers of that.
Oh, dude, yeah,
but that's why I want to watch it back, because I want to try and figure out like when she's seeing herself.
There's gonna be a ticker in this episode. How many times we say I want to watch it again?
Yeah.
It's gonna just go up and up and up. Yeah. Okay, so she's in the TV show.
She's in the TV show.
And she's getting further written into the TV show now, right? Which is weird, because at first they're like, she kind of sucked. Uh-huh. And then she just ends up getting written in more, which, like, you know, it's probably part of her trajectory as a pop star, her management team working for her.
Yeah, but it was also the writer, like, trying to be really, like, controversial and provocative.
Sure.
And like, writing a rape scene for her, like, as a new pop star who's never been seen that way before.
That's
right?
true.
And she was willing to do it.
Yeah.
Kind of without... That's true.
That's
asked.
A good point too. Yeah, yeah.
Which
That's
is a probably a gold mine for them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, probably. Okay, so like rape scene in a second, but one note I wrote like right at this point, I was like, the lines between what's a scene and what's real life are starting to blur in and around this rape scene.
Yeah, 100%.
And at the time that I wrote that, I didn't even know how significant it was.
Yeah,
because it literally becomes the entirety of the show.
They lean
going
into that so hard.
Well, but that's the thing, right? Because, like I remember watching an interview back in the day when Buffy the Vampire Slayer was out, and there was a rape scene in that TV series. And
interesting, I didn't know that.
Spike and I think her name was Sarah Michelle
Gellar.
Gellar, yeah.
That's right? The actress's name.
That's
though.
The actress's name.
Spike is not the actor's name.
Buffy. I know,
but Buffy.
Buffy was her name.
Anyways!
Pretty sure the vampire slayer in that show was named Buffy.
Yeah.
Regardless. BS. Spike and Buffy.
Yeah, they were. But Spike was saying, like, you know, how uncomfortable he was and how, like, you know.
Are we talking in the show or in an interview?
No, in the interview.
Okay, because his name's not Spike unless.
I don't remember the guy's name, all right? Okay. So, like, how uncomfortable he was. And, like, I've worked also with rape victims when I was used to be a child and youth worker. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, a big part of that, too, and what I saw. And what's so triggering about it is, like, even though it's supposed to be a fake acted rape scene, there is a level of uncomfortableness and that is actual trauma that's happening, even
100%.
Though, right?
Yeah.
Because the scenario is so real in a way that, like, it's just, it mimics what could have happened.
Sure.
And, like, you see even in how she starts dissociating.
Totally.
Right? And so a lot of rape victims.
It's super insane. Yeah. It's super realistic. And, like, it lends kind of credence to this movie that it doesn't necessarily just feel like exploitation to me.
No. And that's what I was going to say, too, is
I
that
think it's really important is that they don't, like, well, as much as they show it and as upsetting as that's going to be, they don't shy away from the reality of what the situation causes and the trauma that it causes. And, and for that reason, I think it's a brilliant film in that regard, because what else at the time was showing that side of the story?
Well, I'll say real quickly, another one, Ninja Scroll, with a very gratuitous, much more gratuitous than this, I would say. Mm-hmm. But they also even touched on the fact that there's trauma associated with that, too, because acts all tough right afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then literally the next moment turns around and breaks down in the glass.
Breaks down.
See what I mean? So what's funny about this, hold on really quickly, is that after this scene, she doesn't have a breakdown, dude. She disassociates while it's happening. And then literally right when it's done, she gets in the car and her manager's like, we're going for dinner. And she goes, yay.
Well, that, but
she doesn't break down until her fish are dead.
Which they're not.
No.
Right.
No, but she
Yeah, she's losing. Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? Like that's what's so believable about this is that, like, you have, like, her disassociation when that scene happened,
for sure,
is what carries on in the rest of the movie, and totally. Like, that's so prevalent in, like, a lot of victims in the real world, right? Yeah. They disassociate because they can't fight back, or they right? Like, and it's a weird survival mechanism that your brain does.
Like, don't get us wrong, like, these scenes will upset you.
Yeah,
they are upsetting and they are traumatic and
sad,
and
disturbing.
And if you are you know prevalent to being triggered by this, please, you know, be careful. But like, at the same time, it's that realism that they approach things with that makes it so brilliant.
And
so well, like, done.
Totally. As much as I joke around about crazy stuff, like, having worked in that industry for a while, like, it's rough, right? And so, yeah, guys, take a lot of my joking with a grain of salt. Yeah. But like,
Mikey's
yeah,
really kind and cares about yeah, people, even though he's an asshole to me.
Fuck you. You deserve it.
That's what you think.
There we go.
Okay, so yeah, she kill again. The other thing that happens yeah, here is not only does she disassociate, but she kills the acting of it. Mm-hmm. Right. And I wonder how much of that is her really experiencing it or how much of it is acting, right? Because again, the next scene she hops out and gets in the car and goes, yay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, to me, she's like, a lot of that is her killing the acting. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Intentionally, which is why I kind of made that Heath Ledger joke earlier on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's another guy who like dug deep into his characters and then walked away, like for acting, and then walked away and felt the effects and the trauma of what his characters had gone through.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
And he died from it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right?
The Joker killed Heath Ledger.
Especially if you're like a really empathetic person,
yeah,
right, and being able to really feel a lot of those emotions and those and like not only just like the highs or the mania or the deep sorrow and pain,
sure,
like you're never gonna come away from that unscathed,
yeah,
right.
Well, totally. It's so hard to watch Mima because like she's doing everything she's supposed to be doing,
mm-hmm, yeah.
She's playing it all right. She's cutting the character when she needs to cut the character, and she's mm-hmm, getting back to real life, but it's not actually fixing the problem. It's not solving any of her issues. She's not getting any better by doing the right thing.
No,
which tells you that the system itself is inescapable. It's totally, it's unsurvivable.
Well, she's not doing any work to unpack what's happening to her, right? So she's experiencing all these things, and then she's pushing it down and internalizing it, and not doing any of the unpacking, which if you can do all these things probably really effectively if you also have the tools to unpack it and work through that trauma mm-hmm, that you're sure, now like
but she's also
exposed to, right?
Battling the fact that she's being disingenuous to herself.
Yeah, that's
right?
Factor too,
which
yeah,
is really hard, right? Because like I think anybody could agree to this, like trying to be your true and your best self and have that fulfilling life, right? She's been fed this dream.
She doesn't even know what it means.
But that's the thing, right? And that's where we go back to that night that we were talking
she's
about.
Just going graduating.
Graduating. Like how we have to, like as a society, you know, you go to school, you go to high school, you go get a post-secondary, you get a job, blah, blah, blah.
That, totally. A lot of us don't know why. Yeah. And that's why we need therapy.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
like I think everybody needs therapy.
Anyways, okay, so you know who else is not down with this progression?
Who?
Her manager, who didn't want her to do the rape scene.
Oh,
which is also really intense foreshadowing, right?
Don't talk about the manager.
I'm just saying, dude.
We don't need to talk about the manager.
We do, though. It's important. Because she, like, very adamantly...
There's two managers, right? Dude,
she very adamantly... Yeah, I know, but the one I'm talking about.
Personal manager. Yeah.
Rumi.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
Rumi.
So she very adamantly did not approve of the rape scene and mm-hmm, walked out while it was happening and disappeared and didn't go out for dinner with them because mm-hmm, you know why? Because she fucking went to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, but before you see that, you get the dead fish scene.
Yeah.
Which we talked about,
and
right?
And that was the... Yeah. And after that, it was when she was in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And that was the
totally,
scene that you saw in like Requiem for a
Dream. Oh, but before all that happens, on her way home, she... is the first time you see the Phantom Mima on the subway.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So all of this is happening right after the rape scene, right? Mm-hmm. So we get all this buildup as to why she's like gonna end up spiraling, and then you get that trigger.
Yeah.
And then you get flooded with all these fucking horrible, like ridiculous illusions, confusions, crazy shit going on right away.
The ascent into madness begins.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's that one scene where they finally wrap up filming and, you know, you get literally two scenes back to back, and that threw me for a loop too when I was like, oh shit, it's kind of like Shutter Island. Has she just been in a psych ward this entire time? And like the TV show is actually what we're watch is the reality.
Yeah, because there's scenes you watch that you think is her just living her life, mm-hmm, and then someone yells cut and you're like, wait, what? This is on scene? Like, it's crazy.
No, you know what? And you're right. Like, that was basically the first time where I was just like, oh, I'm not in control.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening in this movie.
Yeah.
I am just along for the ride because up until that point, I thought I was fully in control and understanding what was going on.
Yeah, but you know
what,
dude?
From that point on, I was like, all right, I know nothing.
No, but that's not true because a couple minutes later, they're going to make you think you're in control again.
Right.
They're going to do that to you. They're going to get you again, dude.
You're so right. They're going to get
you.
You're so right.
They keep bringing you up and dropping
you.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a death, right? The screenwriter who wrote the rape scene is now dead in the parking garage. And you're like, oh, okay, it was the creeper.
It was
again,
the creeper.
Because you haven't made any of the connections yet, right?
Yeah.
But that's the connection you think you've made.
Yeah. And then you have this weird scene, okay? And this was a crazy one. And another one that makes you think that maybe we're going to get some supernatural, maybe sci-fi, is that Mima has this vision of her singing on stage again, but the creeper also has that vision. It's mm-hmm. like they both are seeing it happen at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to me, because I'm like, now they're sharing visions. Okay,
that part was confusing, because like some people were talking about like there wasn't a performance, and then they were talking like there was a performance.
Yeah, but it's the creeper who said, oh, she's going to be performing, and then she put it, and he put it on Mima's room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and then she didn't.
No, but she had the vision in her head still, because she's starting to think of the website as if she's writing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's starting to think of write things in the website, and what he writes is truth. Yeah. So it's happened.
It's happening.
So they both have this connection to that story, and they both perceive it as truth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The website has just become the gospel to them.
To both of them. Right. And this is the crazy thing, is they're both connected now by their equal obsession with her past.
And so this website.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and what it's website. Writing. And what it's saying. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think they're both just delusional and experiencing psychosis.
100%. Well,
but right? They're both being deluded by a presence. They're both being
manipulated and puppet-mastered, right? A little bit, right?
Yeah. So, which is why you end up later on kind of sympathizing for this guy a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's a little victim of the system. As fucked up as he is, and as much as he kind of deserved his fucking fate, you feel that it sucks that it happened.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of the creeper, he's ultra rattled about the nude shoot. Mm-hmm. And like writes some scathing shit on the website about it.
Goes around and gets all the fucking magazines and shit like every that. Copy.
It's crazy, dude. Yeah.
Every copy.
And again, it's funny when not again, but one thing I thought when the shoot was happening, just to peg it in the 90s, I was like, at first when the girls are talking about it, I'm like, oh, she's going to do a Maxim shoot. She's going to be a Maxim magazine, right? And then they're like, oh, but this photographer's like super good at getting them to take their clothes off. And I was like, there's probably a million nude shots from those Maxim photo shoots that no one's ever seen sitting on a hard drive somewhere.
Probably. Yeah, they went a little further than what you actually saw in the magazine.
I'm sure those exist, because that's also before like leaks and iCloud leaks and shit like that. That shit's running. People were being less careful, I think, probably.
Well, there were also much more probably brazen photographers who were willing to be much creepier back then.
Because not just before leaks, but also before like outing
cancel
people.
Culture.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. And like and Me Too, right? Like
keeping people accountable, right?
Yeah,
like.
Right.
Which we should all say, like, I like it the way it is now a little bit more than I like the way it would have been back then.
I think we're all in favor of canceling the fuck out of creepy motherfucking photographers.
Yeah, like, what did you say about this guy? This guy has a shootable face? I agree.
Stabbable eyes? Let's stab those eyes.
I agree.
One death in this film I was very much in favor of.
Yeah. Okay, so after this scene, we're back on set a little bit later, and there's this cool scene where the other actress, and this is another one of those reality-bending scenes, right, where they're like linking in real life and the TV show. And so she says this thing about multiple selves. Right, so now you're introducing this new idea in the TV show, which we were already getting an inclination of in the real life. And this is crazy, because this is a concept that I personally have been like obsessed with in the past. There's like an entire EP of my band songs that I wrote about like the concept of being different people at different times that all equal one person. But there's
we all have different masks, right? Like, so like, I mean, you have like the dad mask when you have to be a dad.
Sure.
Right. And like, or if you're going to work, you have your work mask. Like, we always are going to have some level of front or how we present ourselves depending on the social situation.
Totally.
But there's a level of knowing. Oh, I'm gonna sneeze. No, I'm not gonna sneeze.
That's the worst, bro. I hate a fake sneeze, man. But just give me that fucking sneeze, you know? Yeah.
I'm gonna keep that in. I'm not even gonna edit that out.
I'm into it.
But like we're always, even though we know who we are as a person, that person has multiple people within it, but we just understand how to bring those people out when we need to.
Totally.
Right? Like, where as far as we understand with Mima, like she's struggling with the idea that she might not be like the whole idea of having multiple personality disorders, like you don't know, like you're completely gone.
Yeah.
Right. And this other person. Yeah. Comes
you flip
out.
In and out of them.
Yeah. You flip in and out of them.
Whereas I can be like one to the other, but have recollection of the other. And sometimes I can be like a couple at a time or a blending. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very fluid. Whereas hers is not fluid. It's very
it's out of her control.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. So we get the truck scene, because she runs off into the street and she gets hit by a truck.
Yeah. Well,
and you're like,
this is after she like also goes and sees her former partners like doing the radio show of a sudden sees herself.
Yeah.
And she's
yeah.
And she's freaking out.
Yeah.
Right. And like
Yeah. Oh, sorry. She's chasing herself because that's why she runs on the street, right?
Yeah.
And then she gets hit by a truck, which like at the time you literally don't think about it. I didn't think about it till way later, but it's like she only has that planted in her head because she knows someone killed that guy from the concert with a truck on her behalf, right? And so she chases her phantom image in the street, and then that image is also a hallucination.
Yeah,
she's not been hit by a truck, right? No. So she wakes up back home, and now we get these like crazy scenes where she's like on set and in her bed, and you don't know what's happening with the timeline, and she also doesn't know what's happening with the timeline.
Yes,
right. And so this is where she starts to admit she doesn't know what's what.
Yeah.
She has no fucking idea. And right. And then she's sitting there with her manager, Rumi.
Yeah.
And she like crushes a mug in her hands. Right.
Yeah.
Which I thought was super symbolic because there's that sense of like people who like don't feel want to cut to feel something. Mm-hmm. And now she's in that place. Right. Where she's like, I don't know what's real. So like maybe if I, okay, this is real because I hurt.
This is where like the use of that color red that I was talking about before.
True.
It comes in more and more and more because you know a Rumi's wearing red.
Yeah,
she crushes the thing in her hand and she's bleeding and that's red.
Yeah,
her room is starting to become darker shades of red.
Yeah,
right, like it's just that descent into madness.
Yeah,
right, that is just so visually appealing.
Totally.
And this is where you can agree to disagree about the quality of the animation, right?
Dude, again, I would attribute that more to writing and editing than the animation. Like, just making it red doesn't mean that the animation's top quality.
Okay, fine. Fuck you.
I'm just saying, dude. Sorry, man, but, like, that's not a testament to your art skill. You made it red.
I hate to agree with Jordy here, but, like...
Yeah, okay.
It's a story anime, guys.
It is, 100%.
Narrative-driven.
Okay, so let's move on, because the next thing we get to see is probably the best sequence in the entire fucking movie. Okay. Mm-hmm. You get this fake out twist reveal sequence.
Yeah.
So it's revealed finally that the plot of the show is actually the plot of her life.
Yeah.
And this is where you realize that that's what's happening for the first time. Okay. So they finally written a criminal into the series, like we talked about before. And the like lead actress says, you know, what if you can conjure an image of yourself up and then it will like go into another person and become sentient, which is what she thinks happening. Mm-hmm. And now that that's written into the show, you're like, oh, okay, well that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Right. And so you think you've got the answers again, like Jay, you said you didn't before, but now you do again,
back
right?
In control.
Yeah. I think.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right. And then suddenly stab, another murder. And this time we see it happen. Because we haven't seen that yet, right? But what's crazy about seeing it happen is you're looking at the face and you're like, wait a minute, that's not the creeper dude, right? Yeah. And then it is Mima's face.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, okay, it's Mima.
It's Mima.
So it must be her conjured image or
and
her.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly, dude. And then you're like, wait a minute, is this a dream or sci-fi after all? And you're like, no, it's Mima all along because she finds the bloody shirt in her house.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right.
And so that's where you're like 100% it's her.
It's Mima. It
She's imagining the phantom. Yeah. The creeper's
How
a coincidence.
Could it not be?
She's murdering.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's what you think.
Right?
You, that's what you think.
What's cool is that they don't go right into the ending after this. They give you another little sequence of that mind-bending flip-flopping between scene and reality, right? So you're getting, even though you think you know what's going on, they give you another one of these doses of disorientation right before they drop the bombs on you.
Well, let me also say,
the
level of security and safety and comfort I felt when Mima called out to her assistant and said, are you still here?
Yeah.
And you see that she is still, in fact, in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And she's with her.
Yeah.
I felt so much safer.
I didn't even notice that.
Knowing that Mima was there with her assistant in the room, I'm like, all right, nothing bad is gonna happen now.
Yeah.
Mima's safe. Her assistant's in the room with her.
Yeah.
Everything is okay.
Can I ask you a question?
The creeper can't be in there with her.
What color dress was the assistant wearing?
At that time?
I probably was a red dress. Wasn't
it was a red dress.
I feel like there was some red going on there for sure. Yeah.
Okay,
but either way,
pretty sure.
Her presence at that moment gave me so much comfort.
Yeah.
That when that comfort is stripped away, I was truly shaken to my core.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, so we're going to get to the stripping away now. So we're on set for a second, and Mima crosses with the actress in the hallway, like the actress from the set, and she says something to her that really just shakes the movie up to the core. She says, what does she say? Sorry. There's no way an illusion can come to life.
Mm-hmm.
You should stop dreaming soon.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. So again, now I'm like, pretty sure she's the murderer. And I'm pretty sure like we're going to get to the bottom of this right now.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to end. You should stop dreaming soon. Right. So then we get a real life attack from the creeper who comes out and attack her. And all suddenly you're like, wait a minute. maybe he is the murderer after all. After all, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because now he's coming out all
he's
murdery.
Real.
He's murdering.
There.
Yeah.
But he is. I'm jumping ahead again. Like, he is a murderer.
Yeah. Maybe not. We don't know. Who did he murder?
I guess he's at the very least a rapist.
Yeah. At the very least, for sure. Yeah.
But there's also the chance, like, because it's never truly explained.
Yeah.
But when he's with the male manager.
Yeah.
And they're both dead.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so that's never been, I don't think they really explain that in the movie.
Well, I just assume that it was Rumi who killed them both.
Yeah. And she just moved the bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just killed them both in one shot.
My question was like, at what point did Rumi move that body?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she was in the parking lot up until,
So after there's this like secondary
rape
scene.
Mima runs and gets Rumi.
Yeah.
When she goes into the parking lot and gets a hold of Rumi and tells her kind of like what happened, you got to come with me and see this.
Yeah.
They get back and the body's gone.
So,
that's a good point. When did Rumi move the body?
The only thing I can think of is like, because there's this scene for a second where Mima like spaces out and thinks she's on stage and people are clapping for her.
Yeah.
Right. So she's like obviously like experiencing some delirium. In that moment, she could be dead to the world.
You're right. You don't know where she is.
The other thing I thought of, dude, to be honest with you, is like when she smokes that guy with the hammer, which by the way, there's a fucking tool belt just sitting there right within arm's reach right when she needs it.
Very convenient.
Fuck that.
But I mean,
no. Fuck that. Okay, dude.
You need it. Okay. So
there's 100 better ways to write that. Okay.
I'm telling you. How did she get out of that then?
Yeah, how would she
she's on stage being raped by somebody. Something more.
There just could have been something more.
She's gonna
relevant
be like a BJJ
happening.
Master and just fucking.
No, it. Dude, you can use anything as a weapon, but there's just a tool belt with a hammer in it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, there's debris, there's artifacts, there's like at the front of the stage there's
crew.
Light bulbs, dude. Yeah. Grab
stage
a light
crew,
something.
Stage
there's could have been. Anyway, fuck that. A little
stage crew. Hey,
okay. Fuck you need. Okay, look, Mima has gone through so fucking much.
Yeah.
You needed to give her a little break.
Okay, but you could give her that win without just handing her a hammer. Okay, dude. That's all I'm saying. You can give her that win still. She can still hit that guy in the head with something else that she grabbed nearby. Who knows, okay?
Mima is Thor.
But then you're going to tell me, like, say if there's a bottle, there's conveniently a beer bottle right there.
I didn't say beer bottle. I said, did you see the stage had light bulbs all around the front of it? She grabs a light bulb and gets him with that, okay? That's one example.
Okay,
that just came off the top of my head, but it's better than a hammer.
But a light bulb? You think a light bulb's going to stop a fucking stalker that's
dude,
trying
glass,
to rape
dude.
You?
It's glass, dude.
Yeah, but it's a light bulb. It's so fragile.
Yeah.
Compared to a
some
fucking
backyard
hammer? Wrestling, dude. Light bulbs.
Dude, I was a backyard wrestler for many years of my life, okay? I got fucked up from that in my life. I'm just saying that just a handy dandy tool belt is a little too handy dandy for
you know
me.
What? Sometimes the universe is going to like help you out in weird ways.
Mikey. Is it though?
Yeah.
Mikey, it hasn't.
Mikey, listen. If this is his only complaint,
just move along here,
okay,
buddy.
Let's just give it. Let's just give him this.
So we were in agreement that the hammer is bullshit. Moving on.
Come on.
Okay, so
we got him otherwise, I think.
Yeah, it's true though. You
I think we got him.
I'm really happy that you did like this because this is like top five.
I think we got it.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's keep going.
You know what? I would like it better if it was live action with Scarlett Johansson though.
Shut the fuck up! I'll say it for Mikey. Fuck you! Fuck you!
Okay.
So there you go, Mikey.
After
you don't
the handy dandy
you,
hammer incident.
Buddy.
So here's what I was getting at before we went on a major tangent is that like I don't even actually think she killed him with that hammer. I think maybe he got up and wandered off. So there's no blood, do you know what I mean? So me, I'm thinking maybe she just like knocked him out and then she has her like weird delirious I'm on stage and people are clapping for me. Then she runs off when she comes
Rumi
back.
Rumi comes in, stab, kill, done.
Exactly. So that's how I saw it happening, right?
Wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to accept that. It was a little bit of a confusing point for me, but definitely not something that took me out of it. It was kind of just a little bit like, okay.
So here's another thing. I'm kind of glad that the creeper didn't die from her hitting him because it's like, and that could have been the ending of the whole movie. Realistically.
Yep.
If you thought he was the murderer, that's the end of the movie.
Sure.
And I was like, it's just too fucked up of a movie for the plot to be creeper stalks, creeper attacks, creeper dies.
When I saw how much running,
especially with the fucking whirlwind of like, you know, psychosis and like back and forth of like trying to bring you into control.
Yeah. Cause I did think it was the end when she hit him.
I checked the runtime.
Yeah. 100%.
I looked and I saw how much movie was left and I was like, oh, this is not over.
I did the same. Yeah, exactly. I did the same, dude. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, Creeper and Manager are dead. And, yeah. like, again, in my mind, when you see them dead, I'm like, oh, well, now I'm back to thinking it was Mima all along. You know what I mean? Like, when exactly. she was delirious and they were clapping for her, I was like, actually, she was running around murdering. And that's just in her head, right?
100%.
But no, because then we get the reveal that it was motherfucking Ruby all along, dude.
Dude.
All
I was waiting
long.
For this.
And what's crazy, dude, part. Is she's the not Ruby. She is Mima. Which is fucking crazy, dude, because not only is she the murderer all along, but Mima also is crazy, right? She also has been losing it, and she also has been hallucinating, because she's now faced with the murderer, and it's she's looking at her.
But she's hallucinating somebody who themselves is also hallucinating the same vision.
Exactly.
Which crazy, is dude. Fucked up.
Yeah.
So you
their
know
hallucinations what they also, matched up.
But here's another thing. When else had that happened before, right? Because she shared a hallucination with the creeper. Well, and why? Because they're both obsessed with their past self. Mm-hmm. And so it stands to reason that Rumi, who is also obsessed with past Mima, would share a hallucination there with her as well, too, right? They all are sharing three-way this same obsession.
Yeah.
And it's all about keeping Mima...
Yeah.
How she was supposed to be
exactly.
to their
exactly.
brain.
Oh
yeah.
So did you catch the part, the foreshadowing where they actually give away Rumi right before?
No. I don't know about it.
So you know how they're driving back so Rumi is driving and Mima's in the car. It's like Mima's like, oh, where are we going? Oh, we're going back to Mima's room.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Right?
She calls it Mima's room.
I didn't catch
room.
It.
And didn't so when she it. Gets into the room, it is her room.
Which, for anybody who doesn't realize, that is the name of the website.
Yeah. I did not catch that. Because also they're going to Mima's room.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's why it's so brilliantly hidden.
Yeah,
I didn't get it either. Mikey told me that earlier today.
I was like,
holy shit.
Yeah, because that's what you realize is like
such a sick movie.
So this is where
it's good,
this
dude.
Is
the twists and turns.
I'm glad we got to this point because this.
Well, we were not going to get to this. Point.
I know, but you know what I'm talking about. But like now,
that's the episode. Thanks, guys.
Okay, bye. No, but like think about. Like, okay, so this room has been set up for Mima this whole time.
Yeah.
So could she, when she saw the clothes all bloody, was that her room or Mima's room?
I think that Rumi was also losing it. And I think during this time, she's probably been spending a lot of time in there.
In Mima's room.
Pretending
Mima's
to be Mima.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So like
and Mima wasn't questioning it, thinking anything of it.
Because she already thinks she has a... But she also already thinks she has a dual personality out there. So she when she sees elements that she doesn't remember happening...
It. She's just thinking it's Rumi.
That was just
she's
me when I was murdering.
It must be me.
Yeah, it
couldn't be Rumi. It must be me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it just speaks to her psychosis at the time. It's so severe.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys also caught this.
I feel for Mima so bad, dude. I fucking, like, I want to cry for her, man. She's so...
You just want to protect her.
Unbelievably. Right? The most sympathetic character I can think of in recent history. Yeah. Of just fucking what a horrible circumstance.
She just gets taken on a ride down like a spiraling downward
ride. By everyone in her entire fucking life, dude.
Oh, yeah. So let me ask you this. Did you guys catch the other coincidence? I don't know if you caught it. And I don't think it was intentional for the writers with Rumi's name.
Like... Because she's named Rumi?
Yeah.
I caught that there was a correlation, but I couldn't figure out why the two, like,
if
made
you
sense
separate,
together.
It's R-U-M-I, or R-U-M-I. That's how it's spelled.
Yeah.
R-U-M-I.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right?
Fuck off.
R-U-M-I. Right? Are you?
Is that real?
No.
No, I don't. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if it's a coincidence.
No, it is real because I fucking love it. It is real. That's how they wrote it, dude. That's genius. Very smart. Well done, Satoshi.
Yeah.
Well done.
Right, like I because I don't know because like are you me is an English thing. Yeah. But
let's put it this way, dude. Yeah. There's nothing else we've talked about or like been aware of that wasn't so clearly intentional that I'm going to give them that one.
It has to be, right? Like everything else was so fucking intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything in this movie was orchestrated to a miraculous degree.
Yeah. It's got to be.
How could that not
be? It's got to be.
Right?
Even though it's in a different language and it's a reference to a language that probably the director wasn't really kind of familiar with, but like still.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at this point, like I want to ironically
But the names were the names were Japanese, right? Like they would say the name Rumi.
Yeah.
Rumi. Yeah. But did they understand that was R-U-M-I in English?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Did they understand that correlation?
He did. He's smart. Good job. Yeah.
Very well. Yeah. We're going to go on record right now. Yeah. This is the official word.
Yeah, we know.
We know.
We know. Yeah. Okay, so then you get this crazy wild fight chase scene. They're running through town fighting, chasing, right? Intense, dude.
Very intense.
She's like panicking. It's a panic chase, right? Mm. And Rumi is... I mean, she's not Rumi. She's floating
almost,
Mima.
Almost supernaturally.
She's not Rumi, though. You don't see her face almost at all.
Very, very rarely.
Until they run past that, that window
and you in get the alley.
That scene of her where she's fucking like a lunatic.
But when they're in the alley and she's holding her up against the fucking the wall.
Hold
and,
on, before we get to that, because there's another thing that kind of like pissed me off is there's just like a handy dandy garbage pile right when they fall over the edge of the fence. So like handy dandy hammer, handy dandy garbage pile.
Okay, but those are the, those. Okay, so those tropes too have been in cinematography for years.
I agree, but it's not a tropey movie.
And it's just not. Get hung up on that.
I'm not hung up, dude. Like, I just can't love entirely. I have a problem.
No, but okay. like those things are gonna just come up regardless.
Yeah,
like,
and I'm gonna notice them, and I'm gonna harp on them for a minute.
Put it in your
and
pocket,
you're gonna yell at me, and we're gonna move on. Okay,
just accept it.
And we're gonna move on.
Just accept it.
Okay.
Okay. Let's move on.
I don't know. What does that one mean?
What's wrong with you, bro?
That's what I felt with the garbage pile. I was like, okay.
Yeah, so then you do that and you move on.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing now too.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing now. Okay, so then Rumi gets her wig knocked off.
Yeah.
Right. And then she breaks character. That's when they're up against the wall, right?
Yeah.
Because
heavily breaks character.
Right. Because she's, I think she needs the costume and the hair to be Mima.
She obviously needs something analog to lock her in to this character, which I think just speaks to the instability going on there.
Totally, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so she goes for the wig and she falls on the broken glass. And how genius is that? That they didn't have to make Mima murder.
Yeah,
they didn't have to make her do anything violent. Okay,
keep her pure.
Exactly,
she is so pure.
Exactly, dude.
A true victim in every step,
absolutely,
and every sense of
100%. Okay, so then Rumi stumbles into the road and gets hit by a truck, which again was foreshadowed right at the fucking top of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like all this was coming down the line, right?
Yeah,
which was amazing. And then you're like, okay, she's dead.
Yeah,
but then she's not dead.
Nope.
Okay, which I will say. I was at first kind of bummed to get about because I was like, we just had an ending. We had an ending to the movie and a good one that I liked. Mm. And then you fake me out again. And I was like, I know this movie's about faking me out. I'm used to it now. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this one was not as enjoyable. Some of the other ones, like I was like glad, thankful for being faked out. And this one, I was like, okay, another fake out.
Like, okay, I can agree with you to a certain extent because I do really like when movies and shows give me a really solid, abrupt ending where you have
kind finality.
Finality, exactly. Or like an assumption that they're playing on. Like, I'm not a big fan of epilogues.
Okay.
Right? Like, if they take epilogues out of anything, you can just, end it.
And leave it
like,
be.
There's just this.
I'll fill that in myself.
Yeah. And there's this almost the satisfaction that you get from not having an epilogue.
Okay. So here's the thing about epilogues, though, dude, is I kind of wanted one, but I didn't get the one I wanted. So, like, after all the shit that Mima had been through, I would have liked to see some sort of redemption for her in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we'll get to that. You get it in the end, but instead you get this epilogue for Rumi, right? You get this ending scene for her. You get to find out how she ends up, which I'm like, honestly, she should have ended up dead. And I thought she did.
Yeah.
And so that kind of bummed me out. Now I will say the only positive, and I thought about this actually like probably more than I should have, because there's something about this ending, like, it was hard. This ending took a lot of mental energy for me to be okay with, whereas the rest of the movie, it just took me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So in the end, what I decided is I'm okay with the ending now, because what it does is it serves to add depth to the level of Rumi's obsession, so that like she's just like forever obsessed, whereas before it almost seemed like she could flip in and out, and now no, she's Mima forever.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. She's lost, whereas before you were watching Mima spiral down. And in the end, it's Rumi who was lost.
Yeah,
completely.
See, for me, I think this ending was perfect, and I guess because of the work that I used to do, I can really sympathize and empathize with people who are struggling with certain mental health issues or just mental health in general.
Yeah,
right. And so kind of seeing that, not only for Rumi to kind of get the help that she needs, but also for Mima, where she, like, you know, has been dealing with all these struggles and finally having that solidified, like, oh, I know who I am.
And I'm finding okay.
I'm okay. Yeah. I have that identity now.
Yeah.
And we're back. And like, I can now persevere after this crazy, wild ride.
Yeah. Life-changing situation that just happened to you.
If there was ever to be a perfect blue 2, like I would hope that they never do it.
I should hope that it's live action starring Scarlett Johansson. Like a sequel, right?
It was. I'm gonna ignore that.
Just gonna pretend I didn't say that.
Listen,
I have to take a big deep breath for that one.
I think one of the interesting things with as far as the ending is concerned is like it really exposes that like circumstance is really what put Mima out of her element and kind of put her on the edge of sanity.
Yeah.
And it was circumstance that kept Rumi together. Because it was Mima's fame as an idol and her stability as an idol that kept Rumi as a stable, cohesive assistant.
Yeah.
And it was when circumstance changed that
that
it started to expose Rumi's psychosis.
Interesting.
And so ultimately, in the end, I'm glad that fate decided that Mima was going to be reassured in her sanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that Rumi was going to be, condemned essentially to mental insanity forever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like, in one sense, circumstance caused this insane fuck up of life to occur.
Yeah.
It also corrected things in the end.
Sure.
Made things right. Mm-hmm. Because in the end, that is essentially, you could argue that maybe Rumi deserved death in the end, considering everything that happened and the murders committed. But I think ultimately in the end, everything was set right by the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, right? Like if we look at it, everybody was a victim in this, like whether it be Rumi being a victim of her mental health problems and the psychosis, Mima being the victim of the society and the constraints of the industry.
The creeper being a victim of the culture and the industry as well.
All the dead people being victims of murder.
Right. And that's the thing, right?
Series of victims.
In a way, there was really no protagonist or antagonist in that regard, right? Because
I know what you're saying, but
you know what I'm trying to get at.
The real protagonist is circumstance.
Yeah.
Sorry, antagonist.
Antagonist.
The real antagonist was circumstance along.
Is real because life.
There were murderers and rapists, but all of them you got to see how what they became, what they were.
What were they reacting to in life?
Which a lot of the time in the movie you don't get such a rich background for your antagonist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you get a little
rarely.
But in this one, you got like some serious buildup for all of them, right?
Yeah.
The whole story serves the antagonist as much as it serves Mima.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so rare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is much Rumi's story and the creeper's story as it is Mima's story.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if we're going to go back to my first opening statements about it's a movie about Hollywood, like all of those are characters and products of Hollywood too. Like when you talk about this world, exactly. All these kind of people exist in that world. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And so now in this scenario, they all just happen to exist in one small story.
Absolutely.
But there's examples of all these people in every small story in this world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So the last scene, very, very end of the movie, she's walking out and the nurse goes, is that her? No, it couldn't be her. It's just some sort of imposter. And she goes, nope, just me now.
Gets in her car.
And I was like, I honestly rolled my eyes. And I was like, a slapsticky ending for a movie like this was really, really hard to swallow.
Yeah. It was a little kitschy, but it is par for the time.
But you know what?
It's the 90s.
It also like didn't make me angry. It made me giggle. And I was like, okay. I'm all right with
you. You know what? That encapsulates anime, though.
Yeah, yeah,
just like a little giggle, and I'm like, okay. Yeah.
And you know what, though? Like, that's very par for the course, especially for that style, the style of anime in the 90s.
Yeah.
And even now, too, like a lot of kitschy stuff kind of happens in that way. Like, people like that just kind of brief. You know what? Even that Kodak moment.
Yeah.
No, but like if you really want to analyze it in this way, where if everything is so intentional by Satoshi, like the fact that you get a bit of relief.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Right? Like Jay was saying earlier, he like feels for her and like feels bad for her constantly. But in that last moment and that smile and that statement, you know she's going to be okay.
You can breathe.
You know she's going to be all right.
For the first time in the whole movie, you can take a breath.
Yeah. And like, yes, it was slapsticky, but also like, you almost don't care how they deliver that in the end. Yeah. You just want to know she's going to be okay. You want her to be okay.
Yeah.
And she is. And not only is she, but she's like a little jolly. And you're like, okay, not only can I take a breath, but like, I can smile now.
Yeah. Mima's going to be okay.
Our girl's
good. And that's all I wanted from the very beginning. Because, I mean, they do such an incredible job at making you care for her and appreciate her and care for her strife and her, you know, like I remember from the very beginning, I'm like, fuck, they're doing a good job at making me care about this girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like, why do I care so much about this girl?
Because they wanted you to. Anything you felt and thought throughout this whole movie, they wanted you to think and feel that.
Orchestrated.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt played meticulously, like, I played like a fiddle.
Yeah.
And it felt Satoshi so good. In that way, that always feels
legend.
When you got taken by a twist.
Yeah.
That it's that Shyamalan feeling. You know what I mean? Yeah. Bruce Willis
I thought about Shyamalan in this movie a couple times too, because there are people who be like, I saw that coming. I knew that was gonna happen.
I'm sorry, dude.
I don't think people saw this coming, dude.
Yeah. I was looking for something the whole time, and I still was blindsided by the assistant.
I don't think
dude.
Shyamalan even holds a light to Satoshi.
I wonder though if a twist like this inspired his like love for writing twists.
Oh, probably. Like,
this is an influential film. The same way Ghost in the Shell was, influencing future stuff within the genre.
And Paprika is huge, millennium actress. I mean, I don't think Tokyo Godfather was as influential, but still up there. But that one's more of like a slice of life.
Yeah,
which was a lot of fun. But yeah, he's just legend. That's it. That's all I can say.
Damn. Well, respect to Satoshi.
Let's hit up some ratings. Let's jump to some ratings. Okay,
but before we do the ratings, though, I just want to say, if you like, this is a heavy movie with a lot of rich story and a lot of intense mental health issues that you see. If you are, I feel like I need to say this. If you are dealing with any mental health issues, like even the three of us, like I'm seeing I see a therapist.
We all have dealt with it.
Go see somebody if you need to reach out. Like, I'm gonna put a link below, or if you're watching this on YouTube, some resources. Go see somebody. Go reach out. Like.
Literally, guys, honestly, at this point, reach out to us. Honestly.
Sure. Comment.
Send
reach
us
out
a message.
Us
send us something. Yeah. If you guys need to talk, we're here. Yeah. We've been through it all, honestly. Totally. I'm pretty sure we've run the gamut between the three of us. We have run the gamut.
We're all humans who are going through humanity at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And I think that's the crazy thing about, I think, this particular episode and this particular movie is that, like, we I don't think we've ever really delved deep into the humanity part of of how, like, entrenched things can be and how difficult. And
we've talked about love and we've talked about, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but you guys talked about last episode and fucking Opie's like that.
Yeah.
This is grounded on a level that we kind of haven't really hit.
It's about the struggle, but it's about like a universal struggle. Like, everyone struggles with identity. You know what I mean? And that's really the ground floor of this movie.
And you started off, you talked about at the beginning of this podcast about the translation to this, that this would have to live action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as you were saying, how this was intended originally to be a live action before it was an anime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it is so grounded and it is so real.
Yeah.
And it is so real fucking life.
Yeah. But that's the thing, right? Like, there's the other part of this, too, is that we're watching this character have zero support.
Mm-hmm.
From
her family
a little bit,
one person phone call, but it wasn't even very supportive. It was like almost accusatory. Like, why
would you give up on your dream?
Right? Which is not the right way to support someone.
It wasn't listening to her, really.
Right? Yeah. So I feel like y'all need some support.
Dude, we didn't touch on this, but at one point she screams after the rape scene. She's in her house after the fish. She thinks the fish are dead.
Yeah,
she's
in
like,
her bed.
Of course I didn't want to fucking do that.
She's screaming in her bed.
Yeah.
It's a super emotional scene.
Nobody really asked her.
That was such upsetting scene, dude. Oh my God. Watching her break down like that was.
We could spend another hour talking about all the scenes we forgot talking about, dude.
I could spend another hour just crying over what fucking Mima went through, dude. Literally. Like,
but don't worry, dude.
It's just me now.
Right? but in all honesty, guys, if you've made it this far and you still don't know, heavy trigger warning for this episode.
Yeah.
And this anime in general, guys, like, know what you're getting into going into it. It's upsetting in a lot of ways, but it's also,
but in a grounded, realistic way, which makes it cut deeper.
It's also exactly very deep, brilliant depiction of these things. So as horrible as it is to see depicted, it's important story and it's an important film, and I'm really glad we covered it, guys.
Sure. All right, let's do some ratings.
Okay, you want my rating?
I'm gonna guess.
Oh, we're gonna do guesses again. I like this guessing thing. I think we should keep this going.
Okay, I'm gonna say you give this a 9.
Close.
Okay. Hold on.
Oh, fuck you.
I'm 8.5. I'm gonna say you're probably closer. 8.5, and then hold on, real quick for Mikey, I'm gonna say he's gonna give this one a 9.5. 8.5, 9.5.
Yeah.
And just for so you guys don't even have to bother guessing, I'm giving this one an 8.5.
Okay.
8.5. It's losing a few points again. The art.
Yeah.
Could have been elevated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that really would have truly taken this to the fucking next level.
Dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also length. I almost wanted a little bit more. It was a short watch. I feel like they could have stretched it maybe by another 30. And,
a 30 and minutes? You think so?
Even I don't know, man.
Dude, another 30, man.
I'd have to see how they do it before I say yay or nay on that, but I didn't have that vibe.
No? Yeah, okay. The impact of that shortness. And
I wanted more.
Like, you know, it's like one and done. You want a sequel, like,
sorry,
you're,
to Scarlett Johansson.
Well, no, I mean,
I'm gonna punch you. Like,
listen, I think there's three.
He's gonna ignore me.
I think there's fucking right. I think there's three main phases to this movie.
Yeah.
When you think it's the creeper.
Yeah.
When you think it's Mima.
Yeah.
And then when you know it's the assistant.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I wanted a little bit more time thinking it was Mima.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I get what you're
that
saying.
That is the shortest section of the movie where you only feel like it's her for a short period of
time.
The
thing is, and the reason why I'll disagree is because there's only so much of that quick cut disorientation roller coaster shit that you can handle.
Sure.
And another 30 minutes of that might have made me lose interest a little bit. I feel I'd be like, you're fucking with me. You're fucking with me. Whereas in this length, every time I was like, you're fucking with me, they gave me more another answer. You know what I mean? Okay. And if they do that a bunch more times, I'm like, I know what you're doing now.
Listen, I'm not saying I know for sure that the pacing would be better if it was longer, but like there was just something about me where I was like, it's over, and I'm like, fuck. I want more.
So, but more length wouldn't have made it better. You just want to live in it. Yeah,
you just want more.
I liked it so
you're
much.
Being greedy.
I wanted
you're
more.
Being greedy.
That's it, guys.
You're just being greedy.
So okay. 8.5 because I wanted more.
Yeah,
fine. Bump it up to a 9. I don't fucking care.
If anything, wanting more should make you give it a higher score, not a lower score. You're like, I loved it so much, I just wanted more.
Okay. So what are you actually giving?
Okay, I'm 8.5. I'm 8.5 as well, and I agree. I wanted. It, again, in a movie, in a period of time where we also had Ghost in the Shell, this movie with A Feast for the Eyes makes it a 9 or higher.
Yeah.
I also lost some points for that fucking tool belt that like just took me out of it. Took me out of the story for a second. It, you know what I mean? It just,
to a movie that I was
zoned in. Yeah.
It didn't earn that.
It didn't earn it. Yeah. Okay. And
I get that.
Really the writing and editing were the stars in the show. And honestly, to be honest with you, if I end up with my hands on a copy of this book and I read the book, I don't doubt for a second that the book gets a 9 or higher. I don't doubt it for a second.
I'd be really interested if you read the book. Yeah. Please let me know.
Yeah. No, I will.
I'm
for
very
sure.
Interested.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll pass it around. Welcome to the Animation Anime
really
Book
cool.
Club.
We're going to talk about the books.
Light novels. Yeah, we're going to start doing anime light novels.
Manga.
Okay. Mikey, give us your 9.
So like you said 9.5. I'm actually giving this a 9.
That's what I said.
You said 9.5.
But I guess you would give a 9.5.
Yeah. So the only reason is like I can give it a bit more slack because I know the time that it came out. And like Ghost in the Shell also, I'm pretty sure, had a way bigger budget.
Sure.
For the animation.
It's no excuse. I'm not judging the budget. I'm judging the view.
We're talking about art direction here.
But regardless, it's a 9 for me. Great storytelling. Yeah. Great animation.
Let me also just say what might be perceived as them pulling back as far as the animation creativity could be an attempt for them to ground this because this is a story that does need to be grounded in reality in order for it to work. And I think that a little bit of the pulling back of the animation into reality and into being a little more straight and down the lane feeds into the relatability and the grounding of this story. So I think stylistically and story-wise, it works overall. But I'm still of the camp that gave it a slightly lower score
because just
I
angry.
Did want a
well,
little
dude,
more.
You watch the anime.
The descents into insanity
yeah.
could have been a little bit more.
Yeah. You watch impactful. Anime because of the way it looks, dude.
You are telling me you want more to put Mima through more trauma? After telling me
listen,
you want
I,
her to be...
I,
no, you just want to feel her trauma
I
more.
I cry for Mima, but I almost kind of want to cry more.
I don't know if you're a masochist or a sadist.
Right? No, because in the end, the release in the end is even better if the hardships
the
were even
harder.
Harder.
The yeah. same way when you see the like... back in Parasite, like the more brutal and fucked up yeah. the person is, the more you want to see them fucking
yeah.
feel
yeah.
it in the end.
Yeah,
I guess that's true. Like, I mean, I play Dark Souls. So,
yeah. so you're the fucking masochist in the room,
yeah,
buddy.
Let's talk about being way too dark for your own good.
Yeah.
Way okay. too depressing.
All right, my Schweebs.
That was a fucking excellent episode, guys. Let me just say the discourse around this film.
Yeah.
I mean, the film did it for us.
Yeah,
essentially.
It really did.
Yeah, we're nobodies. This film was amazing.
That
and
was
we just,
very easy.
We literally
for us
just
to talk
went
about.
Scene by scene.
Pretty
like,
much.
That's what we did. Yeah.
And the movie
that
did
was
the work
the discourse,
for
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Watch this, guys.
And we gosh, yeah. and you will too.
If yeah. you, if, yeah. I mean, again, trigger warning, but if you can get past that, guys, this is a brilliant fucking film. And it was one that I was like, as I was watching, I was like, oh, I don't think I'll ever watch this again. This is yeah. kind of making me feel uncomfortable. And then by the end, I was like, I can't wait to watch this again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is a magical thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Jay, where can people find you?
Hanger.91 on Instagram, hanger91.bigcartel. I have a bunch of merch up there. I'm not sure if I'm going to have any Paprika stuff up. Probably not. Don't really know if this is a super merch friendly kind of blue. Show, but like, yeah. Chances are I'll
a
have
handy
stuff.
Tool belt with a hammer in it.
Yeah. Whatever the episode was before this, or maybe coming up, just keep your eye out. Either way, yeah. Hanger 91 for all your anime and nerd gear.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Jordy?
I'm reaching in on Instagram and you can come say what's up to me there. I'm there.
You guys can find me at on Instagram at KoreanBBQ86.
Hey.
I remembered again.
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 Yeah.
My God.
You memorized it now.
Yeah, I think
so. It's written on your arm.
Yeah, could you imagine? Why?
Because you are.
Not.
Oh my God.
But yeah, thanks for listening. We love you, my little Schweebs, my little Schweeby Weebs. Bye.
See ya.
We love you.
Peace.